Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Achtung Mohawk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to a midweek edition of Achtung Mohawk. My name is Nick Hart. This is, of course, the number one Mohawk podcast. And this is a special request edition, dear listeners. And I feel like a bit like Ed Stewpot or someone like that, DJs of old, doing requests. This is a special request from Dave Sullivan, who is a very well-known Millwall historian. So when Dave asks me to do something, I am privileged to be able to try and do my best, at least, to fulfil his request. So we had an email from Dave, who's a lover of the random fixture shows that we do, and I know quite a few people do enjoy them. So this is going to be another random fixture, not one chosen at random by the dead hand of the digital algorithm, dear listeners. This is actually one upon request from Dave. Now, Dave emails me, wishing me a Happy New Year, and by default to you too out there, dear listeners, be suggesting a game for me to do a random fixture spot on. Now, it's a long while ago. The match that is intriguing, Dave, as he puts it, is a Western League encounter at Portsmouth, dated the 5th of March, 1902. So what's that? That's over nearly 119 years ago. This is a bit of a shellacking for the Dockers, as we would have been then, Mill Athletic. Portsmouth 9, Millwall 1. And what interests Dave is the reasons, or are the reasons, for such a heavy defeat. Could it be a number of injuries, sendings off, or was it that Millwall just completely outplayed? Perhaps you can include this disaster in a future podcast. All the best, Dave. A few questions arise, first of all, not least would be the Western League. What is the Western League, or what was the Western League? And how did Mill come to get thumped so comprehensively at Portsmouth? So it's probably just worth repeating the date, 5th of March 1902. So this is the 1901 to 1902 season. Now, as anyone who's followed these shows or listened to previous episodes will know, the year 1901 was as close as Millwall's come historically to folding, to disappearing. Essentially, what had happened was that the Dockers were formed, playing pretty much on spare ground on the Isle of Dogs. And at the point of 1901, we were still playing at a place called the Athletic Ground, which was located nowadays next to Cross Harbour Station, where the Asda supermarket is on the island. That was land owned by the Dock Company that basically ruled the roost, called the shots on the Isle of Dogs at that time. And the Athletic Ground, sizeable stadium, 15 to 20,000 reputed capacity, was needed by the Dock Company. So the Lions had to they were given notice to quit, to move out at very short notice, it might be added. And semi-miraculously, I think sometimes words like that can be overused. This was a man-made miracle, not any kind of divine providence. But basically, members of the Millwall Athletic staff, football playing staff and club officials found new land, now part of Millwall Park, which is down near Mudchute Station. And there they formed a new ground. A new stadium was put together at pretty much drop of a hat notice. Elijah Moore was the main man behind the creation of the new ground. That's what came to be called then North Greenwich. That's not North Greenwich as we call it now on the south side of the water. But the effect of this notice to quit and the near folding of Millwall Football Club led to a lot of players leaving the club. They're professionals. These were working class men in need of employment. And it looked highly likely that Millwall Athletic, as successful as it had been as a club, Southern League champions in the 1890s twice, the Lions of the South, contenders to be one of the biggest clubs in the country, arguably, at this point. But it looked like it was going to fold. And many players departed to ply their trade elsewhere. So it was not only 1901 was not only a physical crisis, it was a playing crisis as well, because a good percentage of the first team left to move on. So we were left pretty much with a brand new ground, just, and a manic recruitment drive in the months between the 1900 to 01 and then the 1901 to 02 season. A team was formed. Miracles were manifest across the club at that point, and players were recruited to start the season at the North Greenwich ground. But I think it's fair to say that form in this 1901-02 season, after the near disaster of the summertime, was patchy. Certainly the opening fixtures in the three leagues that we played in. We played in three different leagues, plus cup competitions, FA Cup including. We played in the Southern League, incredibly, when you think about the near death of the club at this point, we finished a very creditable sixth in the table at the end of 1901-02, an amazing achievement. We played in a reserve league called London League, although I call it reserve. The large numbers of the first team played in the reserve league and in the Southern League. And indeed in the third competition, the one that concerns us today, the Western League. Now this was a secondary competition. From the Millwall perspective, you would think of it as a reserve team league, but it was again, like the London League, mostly first team players playing in these three separate leagues. And we finished third in the London League this season and fourth in the Western League. Now, what was the Western League, you're asking yourself? Well, the Western League still exists, strange as it might sound. It's now part of the wider football pyramid. It covers tiers, levels 9 and 10. So it feeds into the Southern League, which in turn feeds onto the National League. But it still exists, the Western League. It's very much village football nowadays. But prior to the First World War, its champions included Bristol Rovers, Millwall in 1908-1909, Tottenham Hotspur, QPR, Swindon, and so on. Nowadays, very much village football. I'm just looking at the list of clubs in the current version of the Western League. You've got village sides, Bridgewater Town, Bridport, Exmouth Town, and so on, Keynsham Town, and so on. Very much Western England, semi-village, but it was founded in 1892, 129 years ago. It still exists as part of the non-league pyramid, which is quite something to see, really. The Western League for the Lions this season include Portsmouth, the game in question, Portsmouth 9, Millwall Athletic 1. So this is in the second half of the season, 5th of March 1902. I do have a match report, and it's from a thing that's a concept that's kind of faded from in this internet age. This is from the Portsmouth Evening News. So this would be like a late edition. This game would have kicked off in the afternoon, a Wednesday afternoon, I think it was, the 5th of March 1902. And certainly the first half, at least, is covered by the Portsmouth Evening News. Now, as I say, they used to have classified editions. Anyone of a certain age, e.g. me, will remember the lack of football information. If you missed the football scores on the telly or on the radio at 5 o'clock, it was actually quite hard to get to know scores at the end on a Saturday. It just wasn't the amount of information available back then, and no easy way to get it other than a late edition evening paper produced normally around 6 o'clock. That would be the final edition. And they sometimes would have the football scores in them, and sometimes the Evening Standard or Evening News in London would have the beginnings of reports of games that had kicked off at 3 o'clock and could catch the print run. Now, this is what this is for the Portsmouth Evening News, dated the 5th of March, 1902. I'm going to read a little bit of it because it's Dave's question to me, which we must keep sight of, is why did Millwall get beat so heavily? And I'm not sure I'm going to give you an answer, but I'm going to give you some factors that go into it, I think. So keep in mind, this is only in the first half. Portsmouth versus Millwall. These teams met for the fourth and last time of the season at Fratton Park this afternoon. Portsmouth resuming their Western League programme after a gap of a month since the last match was played. Portsmouth has twice beaten the Dockers in London and had effected a draw in the Southern League match at Portsmouth. Today, however, the locals were unable to place their ball. The print's a bit wobbly. The locals are unable to place their full team in the field. So this is a weakened Portsmouth side. Keep that in mind. 9-1, a weakened Portsmouth side. And through this, their chance in the competition was to an extent jeopardised, says the Portsmouth Evening News. Absentees, including Smith, Bedingfield, Blythe, so some of their mainstays of their side were not in the Portsmouth team on this occasion. And it goes out of its way to stress that Millwall, by contrast, were absolutely at full strength. They then list the two teams. The Millwall team, in goal, Tiny Joyce, a huge character in Millwall early history. Halley and Dunn were the two fullbacks. Then you've got what they're called halfbacks back then, midfield stroke defensive midfielders, Morris, Bell and Davis. And then a forward line of Ormond, Watkins, Hulse, Hamilton, and it looks like Maher, M-A-H-E-R. It might be M-A-B-E-R. The print is fuzzy, as I say. Weather, if you're interested, was quite spring-like and splendid condition. And Portsmouth, having lost the toss, facing a brilliant sun, made a sensational start. So you have a full-strength Lions team playing a weakened Portsmouth side. We've won the toss, and that seems to be about the only thing we did win all afternoon. And we've set them the task of playing into a very bright sun. It's all going our way, dear listeners. Unfortunately, the ball had hardly been set going, says the Evening News, when the right wing got away, and within a few seconds, Marshall had popped in a finely placed centre. So 1-0 to Portsmouth, pretty much from kickoff. And so it goes on wave upon wave of Portsmouth attacks, a weakened side with players not previously known to each other, coming together to basically pull Mill apart. Half time when this report finishes, this is the half time score, it's Portsmouth 5, Millwall 0. It would go on to be a 9-1 shellacking for the Lions, for the Dockers, I suppose you'd call it. Now, Dave's question is why and how and what went into this. And in truth, the only answers, I can only speculate, Dave, to be honest with you, mate. I mean, going by that report there, there's absolutely no reason for Millwall not to have fancied their chances in this particular fixture. As we've said a few times, Portsmouth were weakened. They were pulling in players that hadn't previously, played together. And the Millwall side was at full strength. The season did go in fits and starts. It had a traumatic start, clearly, with lack of a ground, lack of a team at one point at the start. And looking at the form over the course of that 1901-02 season, our opening nine games were just two wins from nine and six losses from the opening eight games. Then there's another run of form where we win a few and then we lose in another streak and so on and so forth. So we did really well, it seems, to finish in sixth position in the Southern League. And what did I say? It was fourth in the Western League. But it was a season built around streaks, win and losing streaks. And I think at this point, we're just in the middle of a losing streak. The report there doesn't mention any sendings off. It doesn't highlight any particular injuries or players kind of leaving the pitch. It just highlights that Portsmouth played brilliantly in unlikely circumstances against a Mill team that will be should have been embarrassed by, you know, by that situation. So I'm not sure that we can give any reasons for it beyond the ones that we've pointed out. But what I've done instead is picked out two names, two players from that team, two that I haven't previously touched upon, to my knowledge, in any of the history shows that we've done. I've picked out Watkins and Hulse. Alf Watkins, who was a striker, 1879 to 1957, a Welsh international. He was our top scorer in this particular season, 1901-02, with 14 goals. A.E. Watkins, listed in the complete record, Richard Lindsay's complete record. I think he got Welsh caps, five Welsh caps I read here. Signed from, he's played for Leicester in the past, Aston Villa, Grimsby, and then Millwall in 1901. Alf Watkins, 1879-1957. He died in a house fire, and I find this quite sad, and I wanted to mention this because a Welsh football international, scorer of goals in a number of clubs, including our own, a player of some note, in my opinion, and he passed away in a house fire, living his last days at age 79. This is in 1957. He passed away out, and there's just one report. It's a standard report. It's in a couple of papers, local papers. Fire victim. Alfred Ernest Watkins, aged 79, died in a fire at a house in Lambourne Gardens, Barking, Essex, during the night. That's it. No clues to who Alfred Ernest Watkins was. And I would argue the amount of pleasure that, as a player, that he would have brought to many, many fans from across the country and his own country in Wales. So just one sentence. I find that kind of sad. The other striker I've picked out, it's Ben Hulse, a Liverpudlian, 1875 to 1950. Played for a team called Rock Ferry, which I think is a Liverpool side. Blackburn Rovers, New Brighton Tower, which is a football ex-Football League member club, now gone. New Brighton Tower, I think, is a seaside town on the suburbs of Liverpool, on the Welsh side of the coast, if memory serves. Correct me if I'm wrong, dear listeners. And then signed for Mill Athletic and Brighton. Now, we do have some appearance stats. We didn't have any for Alf Watkins, unfortunately, but I do have some appearance stats for Millwall for Ben Hall. 60 appearances for the Dockers, scoring 35 goals. And that's a pretty good ratio, in my opinion. He passed away in 1950 in his native Liverpool. I do have a photo of him, a fantastic photo with a fine moustache. And I will stick that online when this show goes out, because I think it's worth, you know, it's worth remembering these players from the past. Two players instrumental in the season where we survived following the trauma of almost going out and folding. Ben Hulse and Alf Watkins. Now, this is a Portsmouth paper that I'm using to go by, dear listeners. And as you know, it is my wont to always let my eye stray over other news, and there's some military reports. News of the 2nd Hampshire Regiment fighting in Fever Valley, which is in South Africa. This is the period of the Boer War. What's the Boer War? It was I suppose nowadays in the modern context you'd call it an imperial war. It was a conflict between the British South African colonies and the Dutch republics. The Boers, farmers of South Africa, had formed a couple of independent republics. And fundamentally, there was gold involved, the Kimberley goldfields. Now, you can read many, many accounts of the Boer War, and this is not a podcast that particularly sets out to speak on historical matters, but I find these reports interesting. So the 2nd Hants are fighting in South Africa, at a place called Fever Valley, where they've been stationed for about 10 months, it says. There's very little to be done, and the monotony and the heat are very trying on them. Elsewhere, there's reports from the front, active service, the Hampshire Royal Engineers Volunteers. The men are doing exceedingly good work. They've now been in the country over a year, but apparently there is but small chance of the section returning home for some little time yet. The Boer War is an interesting conflict if you ever take the time to look it up. An initial rush of overconfidence on the part of the British and Empire troops led to some embarrassing losses initially. And if you look around London, you look at street signs, road signs, you'll see a lot of Mafeking streets, roads, Kimberley's, Spion Kop, the Kop. Practically every club in the country had the home end, the Kop end. Obviously the famous one in Liverpool, but you do still see them around. I think Sheffield Wednesday's home end is still called the Spion Kop, which was the site of a famous battle. It was a war that initially, at least, didn't go well for the British. The Boers scored some against-the-odds victories, thanks to some poor tactics and what we might call the advent of modern warfare in many respects. You can find elements of... It wasn't the first war to feature trenches as a means of waging warfare, but certainly you do see trenches mentioned, the change from traditional uniforms into khaki, dust-covered uniforms for cover. The term concentration camps, as the war began to turn in the favour of the British, South African farmers were rounded up into central collection points, which came to be known by the unfortunate term nowadays of concentration camps, to literally concentrate the population behind wire. Conditions very, very poor for those people, and in the end, the forces of Imperial Britain would prevail, there was a peace treaty signed in 1902, in actual fact, but the war is still active as we look at this newspaper. And alongside that, just one other piece that's just caught my eye as I'm speaking, smallpox epidemic in London, up to 70 people dead from smallpox in London. At the same time that, men were fighting on the front in South Africa, and the Lions were getting beat 9-1 at Fratton Park. There we are. So that's the request from Dave Sullivan for this particular fixture, Portsmouth 9, Millwall 1. A little bit of side history in there. Hope you like that. Pick my words carefully on some of that, because obviously some of these issues are still highly, highly controversial to this day. And the war was fought for reasons that are complex, but invariably it comes down to money, dear listeners, in the end, doesn't it? Gold and diamonds. There we are. So that's the end of this particular random show. If you have any requests for any other fixtures in the past, do let me know. I'm happy to do a little bit of research. And as always, I'll probably trot off the beaten path once in a while. But for now, until the weekend when we have FA Cup action against Boreham Wood, until the weekend, we'll be back with another show. It's Nick Hart signing off and the Dirty Millwall, dear listeners. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. However, Dirty Millwall, till next time.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to a new idea. I like new ideas, don't you, dear listeners? I am experimenting with a concept that I am loosely going to call Achtung Football. That is the idea that I have with the Millwall Random fixture shows, to basically select a date in the past and see what was in the newspapers at that point, with a particular twist that we'll look at football and how it might relate to history more widely at any given point in the random last 150 odd years since the dawn of professional football in the game. Now, whether this idea works or not, I don't know. Do give me some feedback if you like it. This is going to be more wide than the Achtung Millwall shows. If it works and if I enjoy doing it, I may expand it to be a separate podcast in its own right. So you're very much going to be my guinea pig, dear listeners. So I hope you do enjoy it. The random date that the random.org has come up with is January the 6th, 1986, on this day in 1986. So within my lifetime, within many of your lifetimes too, I dare say. So I'm looking at a copy of the Daily Mirror, dated January the 6th, 1986, forward with Britain. At this time, it's just billing itself as The Mirror, not the Daily Mirror, the Mirror. 18p, that's how much they used to cost back in those days. Front page news is the same as back page on this particular occasion. It's Alex Hurricane Higgins, a master snooker player, genius of the Green Bays. But he's front page and he's back page news on this particular day in 86. Who potted Alex is the banner headline. I fell off a horse, says Hurricane. Oh no, he didn't, says his girl. Here's a picture of Alex Higgins with a black eye, looking suitably, skew whiff on the front page. It's basically a story of alcohol and domestic, a fracas, an alcoholically driven domestic fracas, with an ex-wife and a current girlfriend and a black eye and some storyline by Alex to the effect that he fell off a horse rather. I imagine he's got involved in a brawl or something of that kind in a pub. Who potted Alex, says the Daily Mirror's headline. Higgins, like so many figures of the 80s, I'm just looking at Princess Diana underneath the Alex Higgins, quite a strange juxtaposition. Dies Queen of the Flowers is the story. The story being that Princess Diana was outshining the Queen. So there's two figures crucified, if you like, by the media. Or did they play to the media and get themselves nailed to their respective fates? I don't know, dear listeners. But the point of this show is to talk to you through the prism of football. So I'm looking at the back page. And as we've said, front and back page news is Alex Higgins. He features on a splash on the front. And Alex is such a shiner, it says, because he played Dennis Taylor in a tournament in Warrington with a black eye, which not even TV makeup could particularly mask. Now, the banner headline on the back page is a win for West Ham, beating Charlton in the FA Cup, the 1985-86 FA Cup. This would be a third round live TV. It's on live. This is a difference in times. Frank McAvenny is the goal scorer. Mac, a TV hit at the Palace. So I'll just read you the report for you. It's Charlton 0, West Ham 1. Frank McAvenny wrote the inevitable conclusion to the big television switch-on yesterday. This is when live TV was still a novelty, dear listeners. Just 1 minute remained of an enthralling FA Cup third-round tie. And the BBC's gamble of giving a nationwide audience their first look at Machiavelli and Tony Cotti seemed to be ending in a big shutout. Charlton, from the promotion region of the second division, had boosted their bid to bring increased support to their new home at Selhurst Park. Charlton playing at Selhurst Park at this point. The Valley had fallen into disrepair, of course. Machiavelli and Cotty are something else, and with seconds rather than minutes to go, Charlton fullback John Humphreys sliced deflection, let in Machiavelli. It was like showing a hungry dog a bone as he raced forward, lobbed cleverly, and the ball was only 2 yards short of the line when Cotty arrowed in to finish a neat demolition job. So that was West Ham winning at Selhurst Park versus Charlton. The 85-86 FA Cup tournament will go on to be won in the end by Liverpool in the famous Merseyside or Merseyside Cup final. Liverpool 3, Everton 1 in May of 86. West Ham will go on to the quarterfinals. The Lions, of course, will go out in the fifth round at Luton. West Ham will progress on to the quarterfinals where they will exit the competition at Hillsborough 2-1 to Sheffield Wednesday. That was on the 12th of March 1986. Machiavelli's career was quite sprawling, I suppose. Came from St Mirren, spell at West Ham in 85 to 86, the period of this particular game that we're talking about today. 85 appearances and 33 goals for the Hams. That's quite a strike rate, isn't it? Celtic returned to Scotland for another good strike rate up there, 55 appearances and 27 goals north of the border. And then back to West Ham again, 68 games, 16 goals, starting to fade a little bit, 89 to 92. And then a selection of various clubs, Aston Villa, Cliftonville. Just a question mark against his spell of the South China. That's a great name for a football club, South China. But, South China, Celtic, Swindon, Falkirk and St Mirren, Scottish international, Scottish under 21, full cap and a Scottish B. A dangerous striker, Frank Machiavelli, obviously playing for Mill's blood enemies in West Ham. Blonde perm, if I remember rightly. Lifestyle. Well, during his playing career, Machiavelli reputedly enjoyed a playboy lifestyle. Wow, says Wikipedia. Allegedly, I'm going to put in the word allegedly, Wikipedia says it involves drink, drugs and womanising. I have no direct evidence of that myself. It may well be so. His lifestyle was the inspiration for the parody character played by Jonathan Watson in the Scottish comedy TV programme Only an Excuse. Various shenanigans involving supply of drugs are listed here. And a four-month suspended sentence for a fray in 2008, for in which he headbutted a man in Douglas on the Isle of Man. So there we are, the Daily Mirror, 1986. It seems so close, and yet it's, what, 34 years ago? Come up 35 years ago, a lifetime ago. On the inside pages, just out of interest, we have a report on page 2 of Margaret Thatcher's government going through the turmoil of the Westland helicopter scandal. What do you want to call that? Controversy. Michael Heseltine, picture of Tarzan, as he was known. He's still around. You still sometimes see him popping up on Sky TV, particularly during the Brexit process. Defence Secretary Michael Heseltine was still fighting to the finish last night, it says, as America's Sikorsky helicopter firm seems set to win control of Westland helicopters with an improved offer. This was a huge, huge crack down the middle of the Thatcher government at this point. And it revolved around home control of Westland in British control, or as Margaret Thatcher's rule of the market would have it, being sold off to the American company Sikorsky. And there he is, Michael Heseltine, still in power. I think he would resign the cabinet famously. It was all a lot of hoo-ha. And I suppose in some ways the issues of home control of industry have never really gone away, do they? As I said previously, everything changes and nothing changes. So there we are. That's the Daily Mirror, dated the 5th of January 1986. Who potted Alex Higgins on the front page? A bit of a voyeuristic front page where we all look on at the spectacle of Alex Higgins's private life. And back page, Frank Machiavelli live from His Majesty is the banner headline as West Ham go through at Charlton playing at Selhurst Park. So there we are. That's my experimental idea. I'm going to continue this. I'm going to see how this goes. For a while, I'm going to put it out as an alternative show on the Achtelmoor platform. And if I enjoy doing it, I'll carry on with it as a separate podcast entirely. So do let me know what you think. I know it's not Millwall. Do let me know what you think, nevertheless, if it's got legs and if you liked it or not. So there we are. So till the next show, arrivederci, Achtung. What else are you going to say?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.